with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Behold, yea, verily, and forsooth, May is gone and June is begun. This is the first day of June, 2015. This is Moran Monday on the Horn. Yes, indeed. A little exercise and conversation radio we have each and every Monday to celebrate. Well, we'll get to it. And, of course, you can be part in just about any way you choose of the Moran Monday nominating and celebrating process. A number of us gather in the Horn chat room. You are welcome to join in as well. Let's see. Yeah, there's a ring of the cowbell for everybody who is actually there when the program begins. It's a little sparse this evening. Good evening, though, to Gerald and Anatole. Good evening to Sparky, who is a third-stage field navigator and has folded space to become Man Cave, out in the Man Cave for as long as it remains inhabitable. At this time of day out in Northern California. Good evening, Texas D. Right in under the wire. You can be part of the Horn chat room, too, just by going to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, picking yourself out a screen name and a password, and jumping into the real-time free-for-all extravaganza that is the chat room during the 3 hours that the program is live. Every evening. And, of course, being the 1st of June, well, you know, the usual reminders apply. This is a listener-supported engagement, undertaking, endeavor, whatever word we use to describe that. And, of course, this being the first day of June, well, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table, as it is on every first of the month. And when we increased the daily evening's fundraising goal to $200. I got a call from Shirley saying that, well, she was down for that. So Shirley will match the first $200 that come in, and I am happy to say that of that, 150 have already been matched. Thank you, Gary, labor man, and thank you, Randy. Much obliged, much appreciated. That means we got $50 to go there. Now, one other thing. Okay, by way of program note, now remember, please, that Agnes and I are going to be on the road tomorrow and Wednesday. Tomorrow evening, about this time, as a matter of fact, they will be kicking off Bill Miller, Mr. Stress's memorial up at the Euclid Tavern in Cleveland, Ohio, and we have every intention of being there and bringing it to you. Depending on how bandwidth works out, it'll either be audio only, or if we can make all the magic happen, it'll be audio and video, and if so, I will I'll Facebook and tweet the Ustream address for doing that. Okay, so be waiting. Well, you know, so you know, regular airtime only. It'll go, I think, till about 10 o'clock, and we hope to be there at least a couple of hours in advance so that we can get the gear all set up and make sure all the packets are passing and the electrons are. Merrily dancing through the, well, you know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. So that's the plan there. Then get up on Wednesday, drive like bats out of hell back from Cleveland, hopefully to get here in time to do a program on Wednesday. And then more likely than not, no program Thursday and definitely no program on Friday because, well, this is the big celebratory week as our youngest, Doodle, graduates from high school. Okay? So that's the plan. That means, of course, there will be no Friday on the front porch, and that means also, of course, that there will be no we'll fall either $200 or $400 short in fundraising for certain. So we'll try on the front end to take care of that. And as a lead into that, I want to make mention of something that I got started yesterday. I have in my possession an exquisite, magnificent, lovely, eye-catching, entrancing piece of West Virginia art. I guess one might call it folk art. I call it amazing art. It is framed and matted and mounted. And what it is, and it to simply say it does not give it adequate description. I have it in my hand even as we speak. What it is a turkey plume. That noblest of American birds, which Ben Franklin wanted to have as the national bird instead of the bald eagle, which never fights anything its own size and prefers to eat dead stuff rather than run any risk to itself. Of course, you know, 200 plus years down the road, bald eagle turns out to be a pretty adequate symbol for the United States of America, because we don't like to fight anybody our own size either. But anyway, this is a turkey plume, a big, beautiful turkey plume. You know, the Declaration of Independence was committed to paper with a turkey plume. And I look at the quill here, and I can see why. That sucker would hold a good bit of ink. But it is a turkey plume, and upon this turkey plume has been painted a lovely, lovely image of a red fox, such as one may see out in the hills and hollers here in West Virginia on a foggy mountain morning. And like I said, it's matted and mounted and framed, and it is beautiful. Yeah, boss?
From one redhead to another?
Speak up.
Well, I can't when you hog the mic. From one redhead to another, that is a beautiful fox. It is gorgeous.
You are a beautiful fox.
Oh, no, I am not a fox. But that is a beautiful
and I am a wild, and I am a wild and crazy guy.
I'll talk to you later, Boris.
No, Festrunk. My name is Festrunk. Okay. But at any rate, it's gonna be hard to tear this out of Agnes's hands. She's in love with it. But it is beautiful, and if you would like to see photographs of it, you can go over to my Facebook page, there are two photographs there that don't do it justice. But here's the deal. And it is, in fact, a deal. The deal is this. I was told to auction this piece off. I was also told that similar pieces can be found for sale at around $400. I was also told that they've been known to sell for $500. But I was told to auction this off beginning at $350. Don't worry, Randy says, better watch out. You don't want to run afoul of any Endangered Species Act. They ain't nothing endangered about the American wild turkey, especially not in West Virginia. You know, a flock of turkeys can starve a herd of deer out like that. Smart, smart animal. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That was, in fact, the Viking warrior princess Agnes herself, and she thinks that $350 is a runaway bargain. But if you would like to have this magnificent piece, don't send any money yet. We'll continue the bidding process through the evening, and we'll start at $350. And whoever the winning bidder is, I will announce at the end of the program, and then I'll ship it to you, and you will have a piece of art hanging on your wall, the likes of which, next to nobody else has. This is amazing. This is just gorgeous. Yeah, Gerald, you're right. We're going to be hanging a lot of miles on our hides this week. I'm told by my Cleveland buddy, he spent a lot of time there building a career. My AIC colleague, Bo Webb, I am told that it's about 5 hours, but I know how Bo drives, so that probably means it's 6.5 to 7 for me. Because I just, you know, I don't go howling down the road anymore. I take my time. So we're hoping to be out of here no later than, you know, 8 or so in the morning. And then up and back and across and back. And I plan on like sleeping all day next Sunday. Just gonna. So that's how it works. If you want to, if you want to bid on this magnificent piece of genuine Appalachian art, then send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and let me know how much you would be willing to give for it. And we'll kind of, I'll announce along the way or not, depending. And hopefully this will go rather quickly. Because, and after you see it on Facebook, it probably really will go quickly. All right, then. So we've done with the schedule and the when we're going to be here and not be here and where we're going to be. And again, the for the memorial tomorrow evening is just the same old stream, okay, just the regular horn stream, okay? So with all that having been said, yes, here on the first day of June, June 2015 begins with Moran Monday. And dear Lord, are we going to be busy? I got local Morans. I got worldwide Morans. Broadcast Morans, of course. And some journalism Moranity. Lots of opportunities. So, by all means, I think, let's get it started.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You will not believe your ears as you go behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas to behold Morans of all varieties. Earther Morans, Niner Morans, Deather Morans, Enther Morans, Booger-Eating Morans, Percher Morans, Bagger Morans, Libertarian Morans, Repiglican Morans, one and all. You can't tell the program without a Moran, or can't tell the Morans without that program, as is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeedy, yes, and it takes us about 5 cents per hour of programming to keep the Moran Monday cybernetic tent open. And we advise anyone going through the Moran Monday to hang tight to children, pets, wallets, purses, and European messenger bags as the right-wingers, the aforesaid birthers, deathers, knifers, tempers, booger-eaters, perchers, baggers, etc., can get grabby. Yes, indeed. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans.
Oh, I said we could start local and work our way out. And I also said Friday evening, as we wrapped up Friday on the front porch, that the Morans had already begun lining up, and indeed they have. And by close to home, I mean within the state of almost level West by God, Virginia. Stan. West by Cole. Right. Somewhere in the wilds of northern West Virginia lives a dude, well, named Kenneth Smith. Now, he's not quite as interesting as the lady who sued every homosexual in America or the world or the universe or even history a couple of weeks ago, but this is still a pretty interesting lawsuit. Kenneth Smith of Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, Moran, filed himself a lawsuit in the United States District Court for the Northern District of West Virginia, United States of America, the greatest country in the world now, today, forever. Because Kenneth Smith is an ignorant, probably percher, deather, ninth or tenth or bagger, booger eater, moron. He sued the Jefferson County Board of Education. Michael Martriano, the superintendent of the State Board of Education. Francis Collins, the director of the National Institutes of Health. Arne Duncan, Secretary of Education, and the U.S. Department of Education, defendant. See, this is what happens when they sell those legal forms out there on, like, on right-wing radio programs. You get this. Oh, dear. One hopes that this will be dismissed as promptly as was the suit against all the Homer sectionals, but I would not, I would be remiss if I told you that my optimism gene was running that hot in favor of dismissal. Jurisdiction. This civil rights action raises federal question under the 1st and 14th Amendments to the United States Constitution, is brought pursuant to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as amended, for Religious Freedom Act of 1993, Pub L. No. 103-141, 107 Stat 1488, November 16, 1993, codified 42 U.S.C. Section 2000 B.B. through 42 U.S.C. Section 2000 B.B. for religious discrimination. That make any sense to you? Nah, me neither. Don't worry about it. Forget it. He's on a roll. Jurisdiction specifically conferred on this court by 42 U.S.C. Section 2000E5, equitable and other relief are also sought under 42 U.S.C. Section 2000E5G. Jurisdiction is also based on 28 U.S.C. 1331, 1343, and 42 U.S.C. Section 1981, et cetera. And then there's a discussion of whether or not the court can award damages, which Kenneth Smith says they can. Venue is proper because the defendants reside in the district and all of the acts described in this here complaint occurred in this district, even though it didn't. I mean, I don't think Arne Duncan is working in the Northern District of West Virginia. Mm-mm. And neither is the United States Department of Education headquartered there either. But here's the fun part under the terms statement. Come now, and even in the archaic language of legal pleading, that would be comes now, but we're dealing with a bagger here, so we got to kind of cut him some slack. Come now, plaintiff Kenneth Smith, pro se, done learned him some Latin, tax and tax-paying citizen, supporting public schools. His complaint is against all defendants, S apostrophe possessive. We don't know what his claim is against the defendants. He claims what it is they're possessing. He claims to have something against, but, well, again, he's a pro se litigant, so we're going to just have to, I don't know, read it in or something. Who fostered the propagation of religious faith in our West Virginia public school machinery and government at large. That's right. That's right. The school machinery of West Virginia. Has gone all religious. Is it ISIS? Just say it ain't ISIS. Headloppers! Woo! No, I know. Our West Virginia public school machinery has become a bunch of heathen, godless, atheist evolutionists. Yes. Paragraph 5. Their actions during the 2014-2015 school year affects my child's future directly through the state grading system to enter college and ability to earn economic security and a good job in her chosen veterinarian medical field of work. What a wordsmith. By being taught a faith-based evolutionary ideology that just doesn't exist and has no math to back it. Someone's been listening to the talk radio again or getting transmissions through the, I don't know, through the plates that are bolted into his skull. Yep. While he's not sleeping, the little antenna's just, broop, just like my favorite Martian. Not to say he's an Andorian or anything, and there is our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. I don't think he's blue. I haven't seen a photograph yet, but I'm guessing he's not. So the essence of his complaint is that because somebody somewhere mentioned evolution to his precious pumpkin, that she's never going to get to be a veterinarian like she wants to because she loves kids. B-L-O-N-D. Because I guess, I don't know, I guess the kind of veterinarian that Precious Lumpkin wants to be is the kind of veterinarian where you pray over the sick horse, and then the sick horse gets well, and maybe it's that kind of faith-based, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian veterinarianism where they bring in the dog and they lay it on the table, and then a cat walks around, sniffs at it, and the veterinarian says, "That'll be $750." And he says, "What for?" "Well, $200 for the $250 is for the office call, and $550 is for the CAT scan." Right. Yeah. "Oh, there's a million. I got a million of them." And I guess that evolutionary school machinery when they turn the lights on, does Precious Lumpkin's braces hurt or something from all the evolution that's in the electric current, the radiation, whatever, coming out of the fluorescent ray tube light bulbs? I don't know. But she's not going to get a good job in her chosen veterinarian medical field of work. No. Not going to be able to enter college neither, because, you know, all those colleges out there say, "Do you believe in evolution?" And if Precious Pumpkin says, "Why, yes, I do. That's what they taught me in the school machinery in the public schools of West Virginia," then they say, "You cannot come to college, for you are a believer in demon evolution." I guess that means she's applying to, like, what, Bob Jones University and Oral Roberts University and Jerry Falwell University, and she'd probably have to go through an exorcism before she got. Do they even teach veterinarian field of work at Jerry Falwell University? I don't know. But anyway, it has no math to back it, no how. Nope, it don't. Paragraph 6. Oh, you thought, no, we're not done. Violators of the United States Constitution, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, and the Constitution, the greatest Constitution in the country, in the world today, now, forever, are Jefferson County School Board, State Superintendent Michael J. Matriano, and U.S. Department of Education, Arne Duncan, Secretary. Apparently, Secretary is now his last name. National Institute of Health, Dr. Francis Collins, Director. Director's her last name. All defendants' acts foster the propagating of a religious faith in our West Virginia public school machinery districts. Now we've got public school machinery districts. Damn, this is beginning to sound like program-related activities back during the Iraq War. And government at large in this jurisdiction, through proper legal correspondence as described by law, the defendants have wrongfully violated established clauses. Doesn't really say which ones. There's a lot of, you know what? There's a whole lot of clauses that have been established in this country. We got an entire United States Code full of established clauses. And then, on top of that, we've got the Code of Federal Rules, the CFR, and that's full of established clauses. Goodness me. And then there's old St. Nicholas up at the North Pole, and he has got to be the king of established clauses, because he's been established far longer than there's been a United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, or a constitution of the United States of America, greatest constitution in the world now, today, forever. But we've got a government at large in this jurisdiction. Got to hunt them down when they get at large. Thank God for the Second Amendment, because it was designed for militia units to be able to hunt down folks when it got at large in this jurisdiction. Through proper legal correspondence, as described by the law, the defendants have wrongfully violated established clauses. Still no clarity on which one. Is he talking about the Establishment Clause? I think he is. Congress shall make no law establishing it. Right. This is, of course, something he has heard again through the platinum plated titanium screws that hold down the nut, and I do mean nut, that holds down the plate that holds his skull together. So he's been listening to his talk radio, probably Mark Levin.
As Mark Levin talks a lot about the Establishment Clause, and Mark Levin has a voice made for radio, for print, not radio. He's got a voice made for print, and you can't tell what he's saying about half the time.
And so poor old Kenneth Smith has been listening to his Mark Levin, and he thought he was saying Established Clauses, when all the time poor old Mark Levin was saying Establishment Clauses. And so he has properly written to them as a taxpayer citizen, trying to make sure that his precious lump can have a good job in her chosen veterinarian field, medical world, field of work. But they have ignored her. Yes, they have. They have ignored her, and they have ignored him. They refuse to cease their violations, clearly described in plaintiff's exhausted administrative remedies. Exhibits 39, 30, 29, 34, 25, 23, 36, 94. But, and I'm sure being as how they are Kenneth Smith's administrative remedies, they are exhausted. God, I'm exhausted reading this. While denying the plaintiff's accurate scientific mathematical system of genetic variations that proves evolution is a religion. That's a sentence. Actually, it's a fragment. But, again, we're talking about a Mark Levin listener. It will benefit our government economically and efficiently increase our judicial and law enforcement departments in many ways. And that's one of those moments where we talk about Latin again, because that is what you call a non sequitur. We'll be talking about Latin again in a minute. Conclusion. Wherefore, the foregoing reasons bring complainant an accurate genetic independent investigator to seek equitable justice by humbly moving the court to declare the policy of evolution as to be violating of United States constitutional amendments. I think we're going to have to give a little bit broader discretion to the clerks of courts in the United States district court system, if we are to continue to have a functioning court, system. I mean, really. Because if there's one, I mean, this is like roaches. If there's one, there's a thousand, as proven by Nebraska, and now almost level West by Cole, Virginia stand. Right. Yeah. Now, Kenneth Smith is not just some yahoo. No, hell no. Kenneth Smith is some yahoo who has writ a book. He has writ a, it's called The True Origin of Man. When you self-publish a book at Amazon, you get to write your own description. It says, this book represents the truth of man's origins confirmed by DNA, mathematical, and scientific facts. Student readers of this book will be informed first ahead of their college professors on the new direction of DNA's future. I guess DNA has a future. Of calculating the mutated percentage of cells in any genome. Truth! Some people love being first to know secrets. Others being ahead of the game, and the readers of this book will have that cutting edge in life. Yes. So I thought we might want to go and check out the Amazon page for the True Origins, Origin, not Origins, Origin of Man. You can have it via Amazon Prime for only $19.76. You can have it on Kindle for just $3.99. But I don't know. I think this is the one. This is one of those you want on your bookshelf. And of course, then there was them liberals who went and started reviewing this good godly upstanding Bible believing book. Stupid is as stupid does. The author of this book has filed a court case in West Virginia. Proclaiming teaching evolution in public schools is a promotion of religion, which is somehow preventing his daughter from becoming a veterinarian. Note, you don't have to believe in evolution to be a veterinarian. You just need to accept evolution as explanatory and true because, well, it is. Demonstrably so, if you plan to be any good at being a veterinarian. But not if you're going to be a faith-healing veterinarian. Although, how you're going to get close enough to old Fido to lay the hands on and do the healing hands of faith routine when Fido's done got the hydrophobia, well, I don't know. We'll leave it up to Precious Pumpkin to figure that out for herself. But apparently there's more than there's a lot more magic inside the pages of the True Origin of Man. 100% human, 100% pure white. Yeah, you just knew he was a teabagger, didn't you? One person did download a sample and has kindly provided us a précis on what we can expect. Adam and Eve were pure white with snow white hair and blue eyes because they looked like God, and that's what he looks like. Cain's wife was an ape, and their children were the first dark-haired people. My brain, our reviewer says, started aching and told me my curiosity, enough already. That's a few minutes of my life I won't get back. I may have nightmares knowing there are people with this mentality trying to tell schools what to teach. Apparently, Mr. Kenneth Smith has not been over to his absolute... Because, I mean, they're all like one star. But no, there it is. There it is. It's going to be one sooner or later. 5 stars. This book is absolute genius in a Rain Man kind of way. How many toothpicks fell on the floor? Kenneth Smith is a modern-day Carl Sagan of biology, waxing eloquently over the truth of his unreviewed findings. Who needs peer review when you can quote Bronze Age mythology, damn it? He single-handedly dismantles the last 500 years of interdisciplinary sciences that have led to this errant view that observable processes of evolution are more than exemplomatic of the process and reassembles it into a meaningless vortex of ignorance and bad information. Few people are capable of such poor scholarship, and Dr. Smith, honorary DeVry Institute, should be lauded for his stunningly poor example. The ability to completely ignore the mountains of data before him and then myopically focus on some poorly conceived mathematical proofs are a wonderful example of what effective brainwashing, a deeply held faith based in biblical interpretation, can be. Dr. Smith, honorary DeVry Institute, has taken all his book knowledge and proceeded to become a practicing attorney as well. Whoop! What? No, please, Jesus, no, he isn't, really. He filed suit against the U.S. government so his daughter doesn't have to see the devil in her science class. Lucifer, this time in the form of peer-reviewed, empirically data-driven, double-blind research, as opposed to his more recent reptilian form, will somehow transform his loving daughter into something other than a veterinarian, her chosen profession. We can't have that, can we? Godspeed to you, sir. Godspeed. And so that's what I meant when I said that we would start locally and work our way outward. Further obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening from Steve in New York City. He's a Gorn. And yes, that is the proper ordering of that phrase. according to Steve, it's Bob Jones, Oral Roberts. I believe you. Poor Tim from L.A.'s head's already hurting. I thought these sovereign citizen teabaggers were thought to be sovereign entities and would not comply to laws outside the Constitution by implementing the different United States codes for this lawsuit. Last I checked, well, and there's the difference. One definition of sovereign, one possessing or held to possess supreme political power or sovereignty. Wouldn't then the U.S. codes not apply then, since these idiotic teabaggers claim to be sovereign? The Constitution ought not apply to him to them either. I'm confused and my head hurts. Your head. I've been dealing with this since Friday. Suffer quietly, Tim. Did you get here? By the way, Tim, did you get here in time for the Calliope music? Yeah, I'm just wondering. Yeah. But that is by no means even the tip of the Moranity iceberg. Oh, no. No, no. We got, you know what Robert Frost said, miles to go before we sleep. Indeed. Let's see here. Hold on. Looking for something here. We'll have it. We'll have it by and by. Just takes a second. Just setting up the bumper for a couple of minutes from now. Set. Okay, so onward, he said. Note coming in from Jeremy by a kind contribution. He says, sorry it's not more. Literally all I can do for a few weeks. Hope others can pick up the slack as they usually do. Thanks in advance to the folks that usually do. You have mine and all of us that can't's appreciation. Yeah, it's a community. It is indeed a community. And thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. All right, so we're all abuzz, are we not? I mean, we're downright oh, I don't know, tingly. Because freedom has done broke out in America. Greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Courtesy of freedom lover, libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Because Rand Paul, lover of freedom, done killed the Patriot Act. I know it's true because I got me a New York Times article to prove it. Of course, Rand Paul's running a long con, and you'd be surprised the number of people who are willing to be suckered in by it. There was some prattle on in a late session Sunday in the Senate of the United States, in which Rand Paul stood up and said, "Will we let go of our liberties so easily?" The topic under discussion being, of course, the domestic spying program that has been in force since the reign of error of Dim Leader, and has been perpetuated since. But no, freedom had done broke out all across America because the bulk data collection aspects of the USA Patriot Act expired at midnight. And it was a great day. Oh, it was right up there with the day that the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect, or July 4th, 1776. Oh, yes, it was. Except it wasn't, because, again, Rand Paul and that thing on his head are running a long con. Here's the fun part. One, copy editing. Here is the New York Times headline for the expiration of the relevant portions of the Patriot Act. I am no funny voices. I am not changing any of the words, no accents, no nothing. Key parts of Patriot Act expire temporarily as Senate moves toward limits on spying. One more time, just so everybody can get it written down nicely, because we're going to diagram this in a minute. No, we're not. Key parts of Patriot Act expire temporarily as Senate moves toward limits on spying. I would like to have a word. The story is by Jennifer Steinhauer and Jonathan Weissman. And of course, neither Ms. Steinhauer nor Mr. Weissman were in charge of writing their own headlines. The newspapers don't work that way. That's what the copy editor does, I think, still, when there is one. So it is not either Ms. Steinhauer or Mr. Weissman's fault that the headline for this story is worthy of a Moran Monday nomination. Or not. We'll see. Because, see, what happened at midnight was not that key parts of the Patriot Act expired temporarily. Because that's not part of the Patriot Act. There's not a clause in the Patriot Act that says, as of May 31st at midnight, the parts of this act shall expire temporarily. Because there's not another part of the Patriot Act that picks up and says, okay, we've been a couple of days, now it's back in force. That's what there would have to be in order for it to expire temporarily if you were using journalism ethics and fundamental rules of reason and so forth and common sense in doing your headline writing. The actual headline should read, unless, and we will discuss this further, unless they know something we don't know, the headline should read, key parts of Patriot Act expire as Senate moves toward limits on spying. That adjective there is it's what I like to think of as a Mark Twain, or adverb there is a Mark Twain adverb. Because Mark Twain once said that if you say that something was damned good, and then you take out the damned, you will then have a pretty decent sentence, or something, or maybe it was with regard to the word very. I don't know. But you see the problem. It didn't. The Patriot Act provisions did not expire temporarily. They expired. But either, and I don't know, you can certainly help out with this, by all means, when we start the conversation portion of the program, you can help out with this. Did the copy editor install the word temporarily because the copy editor recognizes that that the government of the new United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, did temporarily get into that headline? Because the copy editor just knows that the Senate is going to put some sort of domestic spying back in place, lickety-split-like? Has the copy editor noticed the basic functionality of the Congress lately? To wit, not at all. Or, has somebody whispered in the copy editor's ear and said, listen, we'll have something in a couple of days, really, no kidding. So that's troubling. It's troublesome, if not troubling. It's troublesome. Because copy editors should not be in the business of saying things that essentially are not true. It was not true that key parts of the Patriot Act expired temporarily. I mean, that's the kind of thing that'll get you a little red circle and minus 10 in freshman journalism in high school, if they still have freshman journalism in high school. Nonetheless, Ms. Steinhauer and Mr. Weissman write, the government's authority to sweep up vast quantities of phone records in the hunt for terrorists, okay, expired at 12:01 a.m. Monday after Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky and libertarian ophthalmologist, blocked an extension of the program during an extraordinary and at times caustic Sunday session of the Senate. Oh my, it was caustic. Still, the Senate signaled, we don't know if by smoke or semaphores or maybe skywriting, you know, surrender Rand. No, the Senate signaled that it was ready to curtail the National Security Agency's bulk data collection program with likely passage this week of legislation that would shift the storage of telephone records from the government to the phone companies. Well, I feel so much better now. The House overwhelmingly passed that bill last month. Senators voted 77-17 on Sunday to take up the House bill. Using the language of uncertainty, Ms. Steinhauer and Mr. Weissman report that Mr. Paul's stand may have forced the temporary expiration of parts of the post-9/11 Patriot Act. May have. And again, with the temporary. Mr. Paul's stand forced the expiration of, because, now, granted, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is a con artist of massive proportions. I mean, he's working the long con here. And he'll have a whole bunch of progressives out there swooning and clutching at their pearls and patting themselves on the chest. My, what a defender of freedom Rand Paul is. Gracious mercy sakes, let me make a campaign contribution to his presidential bid. Maybe Ralph Nader was right, and Rand Paul is the progressive, is the libertarian that progressives can get behind to finally dismantle the corporatocracy in America. Oh, Ralph. Oh, Rand. Or as Mary Tyler Moore used to say, oh, Rob. A lot of this apparently boils down to the fact that Mitch McConnell and is not very much in the way of a Senate majority leader, and who could expect him to be, him not having a chin and all. But Chinless Mitch, yep, Mr. Turtle, sent the Senate into a week-long vacation after he blocked the House bill before Memorial Day. So saith Ms. Steinhauer and Mr. Weissman. So we're still assuming facts not in evidence, in as much as there's no temporary until, and even today, following up on the coverage, there was a lot of talk about how Chinless Mitch said that, well, he wanted to put a couple of amendments on the House bill, and then there were people over in the House saying, you know what? You put amendments on that thing, it's going to die. So here we are. Are you afraid, America? Be very afraid, America, because the terrorists are coming after your local Wally World. Yes, they are. Headloppers! Headloppers! To catch a little bit of the coverage on National Petroleum Radio of this issue, and they had some expert guest on, because they were positively perplexed. They were downright flummoxed over at National Petroleum Radio as to how it could be that a year ago there were 60% of Americans who were opposed to the bulk collection of data, and here, a year later, the numbers have flip-flopped, and there's 60% of the American people who are in favor of the bulk collection of data. And they were absolutely beside themselves over at National Petroleum Radio trying to figure out what it was that caused that kind of a flip and a flop. And the expert was there to talk about the metrics and the optics and talked about how, well, you know, it's a dangerous world we live in, and we think people have realized that, my goodness gracious, maybe the government can be trusted to do this kind of thing. I'm sitting there going, sister, hey, ISIS. Huh? Okay? Because since the poll was taken a year ago, we've had a year worth of the for-profit media hollering, woo, brooga, 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 head loppers, ISIS, woo, get your mama, woo, they're going to lop her head right off because they're head loppers. But they're the bad head loppers, not the good head loppers like our friends the Saudis, our partners in peace. Those are different head loppers. Even though they've already lopped off more heads this year than they did all of last year, that just means they're taking care of business and protecting our partnership in peace by lopping heads. Because they're good headloppers. But ISIS ain't good headloppers. ISIS is bad headloppers, and they got the Ebola probably. Woo, Jesus, did I say Ebola? Yes, yes, yes. Ebola and headloppers. And they're and Obama and Jade Helm and Common Core and Agenda 21. Woo, be afraid, America.
But you can't say that kind of thing on National Petroleum Radio, because if you said that, then somebody would probably take to the microphone over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and say, see there, that National Petroleum Radio, they're just a bunch of liberals, sissies.
But I have no doubt that that's what accounts for the difference. Do you? But anyway, Ms. Steinhauer and Mr. Weissman continue and say that Mr. McConnell, also of Kentucky, relented Sunday. He relented, you see, setting up a final round of votes on Tuesday or Wednesday that will most likely send a compromised version of the House bill to President Obama for his signature. There's only one problem. The House has to compromise two. And whatever those two or three amendments are, if the House doesn't, then ain't nothing going to President Obama's desk. But then this paragraph, and this is dryly funny. I mean, I chuckled merrily when I read this. Little by little, we've allowed our freedom to slip away, Mr. Paul and that thing on his head said during a lengthy floor soliloquy. And yes, you're absolutely right, Barbie noting,
I heard Paul and his buddy Mitch McConnell gave each other the hairy eyeball during Paul and his expounding. I think Mitch is a little pissed. Well, he is. And see, Mitch has already endorsed Rand Paul for president. That's how your Rand Pauls operate, baby. It is never too late for the shivs to start sprouting from between your ribs, Mitch. You best learn you're dealing with a libertarian, not a libertarian ophthalmologist, but a libertarian opportunist, okay? Still with me? Good. Little by little, we've allowed our freedom to slip away, Mr. Paul said during a lengthy floor soliloquy. And that was where I chuckled merrily to myself, because I can't remember the last time that I saw remarks made on the floor of the Senate and reported by the New York Times referred to as a soliloquy. Statement, remark, arguments, all the time. Filibuster, even. Or in the case of what happens in the first hour of this program, filibobster. Mm-hmm. Because every time they tried to extend the Patriot Act provisions, Rand Paul stood up and said, I object! As if he was some sort of William Jennings Bryan for the modern age. But that one word, that one lonely little word there, soliloquy. See what I did there? Lonely, soliloquy, sola. Because, yeah, see, I said we'd be talking about Latin again in a minute, and we are, because, see, soliloquy cometh from the Latin. It is a mixture, an admixture of the word solo, which means alone, and the word for talking, which is loquor. So to solo loquor is to talk to oneself. And, of course, if we hear the word soliloquy, if you're like me, you immediately think of Hamlet standing there, downstage center, staring off into space, asking to be or not to be. That is the question, whether it is nobler, etc. You didn't think I was going to subject you to that, did you? No, I wouldn't do it. But that's a soliloquy. When the guy steps out on stage and there's nobody around and he just sort of gives voice to his to all the stuff going on inside him so that the audience will understand why the plot is going to unfold like it does. It is also... you could say it's a monologue. But no, the New York Times declared that it was, in fact, a soliloquy, thereby making plain that the New York Times thinks that Rand Paul is a ham, which is, of course, short for Hamlet. And every aspiring actor, somewhere in the back of his brain, somewhere in the depths of his soul, yearns for that one moment in the floodlight, that one moment in the spot where he lays hand across his breast and puts his other hand in the air, to be or not to be. And he works lonely nights trying... Is that to be or not to be, or to be or not to be, or to be or not to be? And that is apparently what the New York Times thinks of Rand Paul, which is really not that far off the mark, because he is a ham. Of course, no one has done a better job of sending up the Shakespearean soliloquy than did America's greatest writer of all time, than Mark Twain. You can look it up. It's for the ages. Be or not to be, that is the bare bodkin that makes calamity of so long life. For who would fardels bear till Burnham Wood do come to Dunsinane, but that the fear of something after death murders the innocent sleep, great nature's second course, and makes us rather sling the arrows of outrageous fortune than fly to others that we know not of. There's the respect must give us pause. Wake, Duncan, with thy knocking! I would thou couldst! For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the oppressor's wrong, the proud man's contumely, the law's delay, and the quietus which his pangs might take in the dead waste in the middle of the night when churchyards yawn in customary suits of solemn black? And all the clouds that lowered over our housetops with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. And so, in fact, Rand Paul did indeed engage in a soliloquy. And to remain in the general neighborhood of Shakespeare, full of sound and fury, and signifying nothing. So let's understand something. The Republicans are all pissed at Rand Paul. A year and a half ago, they were all pissed at Ted Cruz because Ted Cruz demagogued them into a mess. Now Rand Paul has. Mr. Paul's effort clearly angered many of his Republican colleagues who met without him an hour before the Senate began to vote Sunday night. Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, who sparred with Mr. Paul on the floor over procedure, said later that Mr. Paul was not fit for the White House job he seeks. I've said on many occasions that I believe he would be the worst candidate we could put forward. Because, see, one of the things they're pitching now is that, oh, we're going to get hit by a lone wolf terrorist. Ooh! Sit, Liberty, sit. But the reason I refer to this as a long con is that Rand Paul knows they're gonna put the domestic spying back into place, and I know it, and you know it, because no matter how dysfunctional the Congress may seem, when it comes down to something they all really want, they can do it yesterday. Think about during the sequester and the insurgency that shut down the federal government. When it turned out that a whole bunch of members of Congress were going to be inconvenienced by closures at various and sundry airports because of furloughs to FAA employees, well, by God, that didn't last more than a day and a half, did it? Because the entire House and the entire Senate came together and said, gentlemen, we've got to protect our phony baloney jobs. Rumpf! And lo and behold, the air traffic controller problem was solved. And they'll do the same with this. Don't kid yourself. You live in a crumbling empire, and it is going to behave in crumbling empire fashion. And meanwhile, Rand Paul, who has almost a zero chance of ever becoming president, is going to try to demagogue. Hey, I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Harumph. Yeah, watch your ass. Rand Paul is going to try to demagogue this into conning. He's going to try to con the teabaggers, but that's an easy con because they're simple. Simon Simple and Simon Pure. Walking around with their misspelled signs and their funny hats and their snake flags. But he's also going to try to cobble together a coalition by conning progressive people. And that's my concern. because anybody, well, anybody who would fall for Rand Paul's Libertarian Freedom Con, I got a bridge I want to sell you. It's in Brooklyn. You can put it anywhere you want once you bought it, but, I mean, it's in Brooklyn right now. Oh, Rand Paul's going to restore American freedom, and we're all going to wear tri-cornered hats, and we're going to have a gold-based currency, and we'll all lift ourselves up by our own bootstraps. Because freedom, greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Amen. See what I mean? What kind of odds you give it? How many progressives do you think will be out there wearing those dumbass red t-shirts? I stand with Rand! See, it rhymes and everything. Jim noting, I have sent Rand Paul a case of crazy and Gorilla Glue. It's the least one can do, right? The very least, Jim. The very least. It is 6 minutes past the hour and time to wrap up the filibuster. A reminder of the phone numbers, of course. Line 1, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. And then there's the stress line, 304-663-4676, if you want to get into the conversation. You're welcome to go in with either line, 304-663-HORN or 304-574-8178. You can also reach via Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet. Skype's real easy. Just if you've never done it before, send me a contact request. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And if you've done it before and you, well, it's easy. You can get in that way too. If you prefer not to talk and you're nervous about that kind of thing, well, golly gee, you're welcome to send an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Again, BobKincaid @gmail.com. You can also reach me on the Twitters, @BobKincaid. You can reach me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. See how it works? And a reminder, go over and have a look at the magnificent work of West Virginia folk art that is available to you this evening with a beginning bid of $350. It's amazing. It is exquisite. And it will also, it was put forward as a kind means of helping the Horn in this rather difficult week when our fundraising is, by definition, going to take a kick in the shorts. Also, we have $50 remaining this evening on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, so hopefully that will be filled so that Shirley can match the money of those who contributed. Thank you so far to Randy and to Gary Laborman. Thank you to Jeremy. And hopefully there will be someone else along the way. All right. So light up the phones, if you wish. Or I can filibuster further, assuming that, my God, we've had some thunderstorms here today. If you'd been out in them, I think the raindrops could have given you a concussion. It was brutal. Hopefully it will clear off and we'll have a nice dry drive to Cleveland tomorrow and a dry drive back. But the thunder's still rolling through, so I will simply offer a caveat that if things suddenly go and the stream disappears, I haven't gone on strike or anything. That's just a matter of the weather taking out the interweb tubes, as occasionally happens here for reasons I do not fully understand. All right, so now I can close out, hallelujah, I can close out the lawsuit filed by Kenneth Smith, 100% pure, 100% white. Beautiful, just beautiful. And we'll see what else we've got, and we've got a lot for this Moran Monday coming up. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. as it has been in excess of 10 years. This is the horn. And this is for you, Kenneth Smith in Harper's Ferry. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. Well, it's 11:15 and you're sleeping on the bedroom floor. I can see the fire burning, burning right behind your eyes. I can see the fire burning, baby, burning right behind your eyes. You must have swallowed a candle or some other kind of surprise. I'm going down to Memphis, got $300 in cash. Yeah, I'm going down to Memphis, got $300 in cash. All the women in Memphis gonna see how long my money could last. Going downtown, gonna rattle somebody's cage. Yeah, I'm going downtown, I'm gonna rattle somebody's cage. I'm gonna beat on my guitar and strut all around the stage. If you see my baby coming, don't you tell her that her daddy's in jail. If you see my baby coming, don't tell her that her daddy's in jail. She'd sell her little pumpkin just to raise her sweet daddy's bail. You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. You must be daddy's little pumpkin, I can tell by the way you roll. Well, you never do nothing to save your doggone soul.
One and only John Prine, Daddy's Little Pumpkin, for Kenneth L. Smith, no, Kenneth Smith, and his poor little daughter, who is not going to be able to be a veterinarian in her chosen field of work, because evolution. 100% white, 100% pure. Sounds a little like an ivory soap ad, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It's true, Gerald. It's true. Gerald noting, damned if John Prine doesn't have a lot of appropriate songs for this program. Absolutely. It's kind of a miracle that way. And yes, in response to a question off air or away from the phones or whatever, again, a reminder, we will begin the Bill Mr. Stress Miller Memorial. It begins at about 6 o'clock. Tomorrow evening at the Euclid Tavern, not too far from University Circle in Cleveland, Ohio, and we will begin when it begins. So I hope you'll be either here on the horn stream, or if it works out, and I'll let you know early on via tweet and Facebook, I'll let you know if we're going to be on the Ustream, okay? Okie dokie. Let's see. What else? Or where to go? I want to share something with you just because I've had such a delightful time reading it over the weekend. I put it on my Facebook page. And I noted at the time that this may be the funniest thing that Andy Borowitz over at the New Yorker has ever written, and he's written some funny stuff. But it kind of begged, and I know how much Barbie enjoys it. It kind of begged for that voice. You might want the hockey puck for this. It's not real, but it's near enough to reality to be imaginable as such. Now, of course, Bomber John McCain is really, really pissed at Rand Paul, libertarian opportunist. So what? Bomber John is always pissed. Or would we call him Wet Fire John? I don't know. It's confusing what he did, whether he did or didn't have anything to do with the horrible fire above the USS Forrestal. So just enjoy. Calling the Obama administration's actions against the soccer organization FIFA weak and ineffective, Senator John McCain on Thursday proposed military action to dismantle and destroy FIFA once and for all. These are people who only understand one thing, force, McCain said on the floor of the United States Senate. We must make FIFA taste the vengeful might and fury of the United States military. McCain said that he was completely unimpressed by the Department of Justice's arrests of several top FIFA lieutenants this week, calling the action the kind of Band-Aid solution that this administration, sadly, has become famous for. Rounding up a few flunkies in a hotel is meaningless when the leader of FIFA remains at large. I will follow Sepp Blatter to the gates of hell. McCain requested a $4 billion aid package for moderate elements within global soccer and said that the United States should be prepared to put boots on the ground in Switzerland. Calling the use of force against FIFA long overdue, he placed the blame for the group's alarming growth squarely on the shoulders of the White House. Barack Obama created FIFA, he said. There's an alternate universe where that's actually real. It's so absolutely believable. Because Grumpy John is not happy if somebody's not getting bombed. Oh, and speaking of getting bombed, it was a watershed day here in the greatest country in the world on Earth now today forever. It was down there they had the barbecue pits all a smoking away, and there was pigs and chickens and beef and the occasional possum barbecue, and down to the ancestral home of the graham cracker family, you know, smoldering chode. Yes. As America's long, long awaited mystery was finally solved. Would Lindsey Graham or would not Lindsey Graham run for president of the new United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever? Mm-hmm. Well, the waiting is over. There, amidst the magnolias and the palmettos on the ancestral estate at Smoldering Chode, yes, Lindsey Graham said he's going to run for president before that one in our White House gets us all killed. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the audio, shall we?
No one here, including me, ever expected to hear me say, I'm Lindsey Graham, and I'm running for President of the United States.
Oh, Rob.
Thank you. I'll turn back there. I hope they hear that all over the world that I'm running for President of the United States.
Indeed, indeed. You know what? I hope they hear it there over in the former Iraq, because you know them ISIS headloppers we'll just quiver in fear because a manly man like Lindsey Graham Cracker is going to be on the job come January 20, 2017. And I tell you what, he is going to bomb and bomb and bomb. Or, as Gerald notes, and then Pooh turned to Piglet and said, "Oh, bother." Tut, tut, it looks like bombing. Tut, tut, it looks like bombing. Mm-hmm. And of course, as he has told us in the past, he will have rooms full of manly men there at the White House. Yes, manly white men. Yeah, that's right. Turn around. Get my good side. Get my good side. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we won't have to be bothered anymore by all of those stories of James Buchanan's lover. What was that senator's name? He was from Alabama. Oh, goodness, yes. There he is, yes. Just one second here. There it is, personal life. William Rufus Devane King, who bears a slight little resemblance probably to Lindsey Graham. He was a senator from Alabama, and all the other senators referred to him as Nancy. They did. They weren't trying to be. Her name was McGill, but she called herself Lil, but everyone knew her as Nancy. It's just right there out of Rocky Raccoon. It is. And in point of fact, it is a source of great shame to the progressive people who live in Seattle that King County up there was originally named for Rufus Devane King. Mm-hmm. In fact, it had become so shameful after a time, they had to pass a resolution saying that King County was named also after Martin Luther King Jr. Rufus Devane King was America's first gay vice president. 10 years they lived together, 1834 until 1844, when Rufus Devane King left for France. Mm-hmm. Andrew Jackson, who was a coarse and vulgar man, I tell you, coarse and vulgar, not to mention being a genocidalist, referred to Buchanan and King as Miss Nancy and Aunt Fancy. Aaron B. Brown said that Rufus Devane King was James Buchanan's better half. Mm-hmm. poor Miss Bobby is lost in paroxysms of laughter at the moment. Will somebody please fetch her a tissue? Yes. Breaking news via the Associated Press Institute. At a press conference announcing his bid for the 2016 GOP presidential nomination, Lindsey Graham declared that if he is elected, he will finally definitively prove he is straight by starting a bunch of wars in some places or something. Graham would be the first bachelor president since the definitely heterosexual James Buchanan. Mathematicians are trying to estimate how many candidates have now entered the GOP primaries. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness me. I'm looking here at the crowd because the audio that I'm playing of Senator Graham, they're going to get us all killed. Mercy sakes. You know what? There are three people who are darker than a grocery bag, sitting in the crowd behind him, showing that he is truly, truly the president who is going to unite us after 8 years of being divided on race.
by that one in our White House.
It's because of you that I can make that statement. Everything I am, everything I will be, owe to the kindness and generosity and
of strangers. No, please, 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 no.
Example of people of Central, Clemson, Seneca, Walhalla, and other small towns throughout South Carolina. Thank you. Thank you for everything.
You know, that's what Lindsay says when somebody reaches over and pinches him on his little tooth. Walhalla! Mercy sakes, you are incorrigible. You are. So we have that to take note of. I hope the Republican field is paying attention, because finally there is somebody who's going to try to protect us from all them headloppers, except the Saudi headloppers, who are our partners in peace. Okay, just so we understand. Mm-hmm. Stop with the accent, Bob. Let's run on over to the Skype line and have a conversation with, I suspect, John. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, it depends on whether you're asking me with an accent or not. Mercy sakes, I am feeling fine as froghead, John. I'm going to be president of the United States. Sorry. John?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought you was talking about John McCain, so I was kind of holding back. I didn't know if you were talking to me or not.
John, yes.
Yes.
Because
I listened on my phone, and then when I decided to break down the call, I got to shut down the tunes and then call, and then so I missed a few seconds, and so I missed the line. But, yeah. They can't even do a damn bus anymore. They gotta break out a freaking boat. You know, one of them damn paddle wheelers or something running up and down the Mississippi for all these damn candidates.
Oh yeah, or maybe that busload of potty, that boatload of potty mouths from Russia, you know, the vulgar boatmen. Oh, they're hunkers. No good sons of bitches. You know, the vulgar boatmen.
Oh yeah.
That would be them.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous, and it's all, and half of it's a shuck and jive, because that's how Huckabee made his money. He runs for president, gets all these mailing lists and crap that he gets, and then sells them off for the next decade. So, you know, it's a shuck and jive. These guys are, I hate to say it, but I'm not even sure any of them are really all that serious about winning, because they
no, you don't. Somewhere there's a molecule in each one of them's brain that says, I can be president, I can be a contender. Only well, some of them it's more of a Marlon Brando kind of a thing, but yeah.
Yeah, it's sick. Part of what sparked me to call, and I don't know if your news ninja's online tonight, she can pull it up because I don't have access to the computer right at the moment. But the Supreme Court's chewing on something that, if they go the way that I'm betting they will, it's going to change a good chunk of the way that the voting's done.
Oh yeah, we've been working on this for a while. That thing will probably wind up in front of the Supreme Court by about 2016, just in time to wreck the 2016 presidential election.
Yeah, I got a note sent to me this morning about it, and then I started doing some, you know, backhanded research, and I'm going, first of all, it was what? Then what the fuck? And it just went downhill from there. Because they're basically trying to set it up so that the rural population will run the country for the next generation.
Well, come on, John, let's not mince words. So that the increasingly minority white population will run the country.
Yeah, but I'm trying to be nice, you know.
You don't got to do that here.
But yeah, I saw that and I was like, damn. And you know, I'm taking a couple of days off for some vacation time, and I'm sitting and I'm going, you know, I have a chance to actually sit down and do some stuff. And I was looking, and I listened to a piece of Lindsay's announcement. And then you got, I'm a little, it's got me a little bit weirded out because, you know, when O'Malley dialed in, you know, maybe just the way the news media is set up because they're so much into horse racing and trying to pit one group against another, but it was like, you know, O'Malley, he was such a staunch supporter of Hillary and Bill Clinton, and now he's turned their back on him, and now he's going
to... Yeah, boy, I tell you what, that just sounds like the setup to a wrestling match, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the, go SmackDown and get your tickets now for WrestleMania 9500.
Well, it seems pretty clear to me based on the way Martin O'Malley positioned himself in his announcement. It seems to me that what he's supposed to do is to dilute the force and effect of Bernie. Because, see, out in Davenport in Iowa City, Iowa Wasteland, I'm informed in the chat room by iPie that Bernie had overflow crowds in both cities. There is a bunch of momentum building behind Bernie Sanders. You know, some of the unicorn sparkle pony crowd that keeps thinking that they can that no means yes from Elizabeth Warren are finally, I think, beginning to see the light. And you know, if the Greens come around, things could get serious pretty quick for Bernie.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you toss a Martin O'Malley into the mix as somebody who could dilute that in case he actually does begin to mount a serious challenge to the coronation of Senator Secretary Clinton.
And doesn't that make your cynical heart just go, what the hell? Because
No, John, it makes my cynical heart go, well, look, we're doing it the same way we've always done it.
Yeah. You know, the guy brings up solid, real things for real people. You know, I've listened to Mademoiselle Clinton here for the last few weeks, and I got to admit, she has to wear a freaking pantsuit because she's tap dancing so fast she'd set her dress on fire.
Now, let's not be nasty, but no, I mean, consider, and this is one of those Bill would enjoy this analogy. Let us please to remember that the only way that Abraham Lincoln became president of the United States in the election of November 1860 was because the Democratic Party could not get its shit together.
Yep.
And therefore that allowed a little insurgent party, the Republicans, which were founded out of the ashes of the Whigs and the Know-Nothings and a few others, to actually take the presidency.
Yeah. But, you know, what I'm referring to is that, I mean, you know, it's like the TPP business. I mean, it is one of the hottest subjects out there in the radio land right now. And she is going out of her way to not commit herself one way or the other on it. You know, you can pretty much figure where, because of all that banking money she's getting, that she's going to do everything she can not to commit herself. And then you got Bernie talking about it. And like you say, the liberal base, is it such as it is, you know, that's what they want to hear. And, you know, it kind of saddens me a little bit that it damn seems like, in some ways, it seems like the damn Democrats are gunning after Bernie as hard as the Republicans would.
Well, some of them are. The lick spittles for Wall Street, sure they are. You think Chuck Schumer wants Bernie Sanders to be president? He's a Wall Street lick spittle from way back.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, it's some crazy, crazy. Yes, I almost look forward to it just to hear the hollering and screaming it's going to go on for the next year and a half. But like you said, it's these couple of Supreme Court cases that are going to really, or oddly enough, they're going to set the stage. You know. That's the part that really bothers me, because they had a couple of things today that pumped their way through. And one of them was just, I mean, unfreaking believable. They got like an 8-2 decision on a free speech thing that pretty much blew the hell out of anything. I mean, I'll kill you on the internet. And as long as you can't prove the guy was actually planning to do it, it's no longer considered, it's no longer against the law. It was an 8-2 decision.
Well, there was that one, and see that, you know, I wasn't particularly surprised by that. Then there was a 7-2 decision, which tells me that maybe there's some the rats or some portion of them, their seams are beginning to split a little bit. I found that one fascinating. An immigrant to the United States who had been a mathematics professor got busted with, he was pulled over for DUI, but upon searching him, they found 4 orange pills inside 1 sock. Okay? And they tried to deport him over that, John. And it gets even better. With the theory being that the sock was drug paraphernalia. And it turned out, of course, that the pills weren't even a heavy-duty scheduled banned drug. It was 4 hits of Adderall, which apparently has become a big go-to pharmaceutical on college campuses because kids can stay up and study all night.
Yeah.
So, amazingly, with, of course, Clarence Coke Can Thomas, grateful for the fact that he was never busted with a pubic hair on a Coke can, only they smeared the woman who told about it. Clarence Thomas said, "I find no problem in throwing undesirables like this man out of the country." But the 7-member majority said, "This is nuts." And so hopefully the man, he hopes to return to the United States because the dirty business of getting him out of the United States has already been done.
Yeah. Well, did you like the Abercrombie Fitch case?
That one I may have missed.
Abercrombie Fitch, denied hiring a lady because she was wearing a burqa or a Islamic headset or a headdress or whatever. Said it was against the company image or whatever it was, and it bounced to the courts.
Oh yeah, there it is, and they ruled in her favor for needing to be able to wear headgear while she worked for Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah, but did you check out the underlying the whole religious thing? I don't care. To me it makes no difference. But I find it a little dangerous that they fall onto the using the religious argument, and then it's just like Hobby Lobby, it's just like Citizens United, these narrow ass decisions.
Oh, you mean the narrowly reached decisions that are of limited applicability that turn out to be great big honking disasters?
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it. If you say to somebody, okay, you can wear this because it's part of your religion, it's not that big a step to take it. You already see what's been going on with the other cases.
Right, and the Supreme Court said, listen, if you're an employer, you have to accommodate somebody if they tell you that their imaginary friend will hate them if they don't wear the headgear.
Right. Well, what else is going to come down?
Now, personally, I hope this case can be taken to its ridiculous, reducto ad absurdum end. I'm hoping that somebody will show up at a Hobby Lobby and apply for a job while wearing a colander on his or her head. Because, of course, everyone understands that that is the necessary headgear for followers and adherents of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Forgive me,
this isn't about Muslim, not Muslim, Jewish, not Jewish, Christian, not Christian. You know, what do you do? You know, reasonable accommodations, baby. What do you do when you've got some fundy who has to drag a cross around with him? I mean, the real thing, you know, over the shoulder, drag a... clean up in aisle 4, and I'll be there in a minute. I got a cross with me. What happens when that comes along?
Oh, yeah. You know, or somebody...
And once again, we're giving precedence to the self-professed preferences of somebody's invisible friend.
Yeah, well, that's what I was referring to. I was like, for a so-called modern civilization, we seem to be running at warp speed to drag every Bronze Age yabba-dabba-do they come up with. And I just suspect it's going to be, just like you said, it's going to come back and it's going to bite them in the backside. And next thing you know, the next 5 or 10 years, you're going to have colanders on the head. You're going to have,
Mickey Mouse ears. Mickey Mouse ears.
Yeah.
And you're not working at the Disney store. I mean, I can't wait until, say, a hotshot Wall Street investment firm like, J.P. Morgan or Goldman Sachs, I can't wait until they have to start hiring people who are wearing mouse ears.
Yeah, there goes the three-piece suit there.
And we do have Satanists out there. What happens when they have to show up wearing little red plastic horns on their head?
Yeah. Tell you. Hey, I'm the Church of Satan, baby. I got to wear my headgear.
Yep. Got my pointy little horns. Blessed be his terrifying name. And Lord only knows what the followers of Cthulhu will need to wear.
Well, they're strictly chaotic, so they'll just pretty much grab dice and roll it. But I got such a kick out of it, and I went through Texas. I just came out of Texas, and it was like I had so much fun. Oh my God!
Which part of Texas were you in?
Oh, I went through the whole bloody thing. I basically came in from the northeast, went all the way down through Houston, down through Laredo, back out the backside. I'm in California now, but I had so much fun because
you've just created way too many horrifying mental images for people by saying you came out of the backside of Texas.
Well, yeah. Hey, we go figure. It's all good, but. I sit there, and I remember a couple years ago, and I had this, was it with this one truck stop, and they were talking about the flooding and stuff. And I remembered, I have to admit, Bob, you did it. You set the seeds in my mind, so partly it's your fault. You're going to have to accept some of the responsibility.
Oh, dear.
But I said, so, how about all them prayers that old Mr. Perry did back a couple years ago? You all wanted to pray for water. Well, you got it. Oh, the howling and the screaming.
Well, it works, baby.
It works. And then one guy said, well, why did it take so long? I said, well, hell, you had 70,000 people, but God, that stuff don't happen overnight.
No, I mean, he's got other work to do. He's got to make sure that people get drafted in the correct round of the NBA and NFL draft. He's got to make sure that quarterbacks are able to hit wide receivers on crossing routes and keep them from getting absolutely lambasted by the linebackers so that they can then run on into the end zone and point at the sky and thank God for giving them a touchdown. He's a busy deity.
Exactly. I told him, I said, you know, you guys sat there and you prayed, you know, talking about your water and everything, and now you got it. And what really got me was what really shafted me, man, part of the conversation got kind of ugly there a little bit because I said, you sit there and you bitch and complained. You had Perry talking about he wanted to secede from the union. You have Cruz bitching about federal government and wanting to shut down FEMA and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and he couldn't be persuaded to vote in favor of Sandy relief when that shit went down.
Yeah, but now that they got the freaking, now that Houston's standing in 8 feet of freaking water, what's the first words out of his mouth? We need money from Washington. As far as I'm concerned, they would be glad I'm not president, because I'd be like, money? For you? Ah!
Yeah, just go over to that vacant Walmart over there.
Yeah, just go to Walmart and get one of them little hand pumps and hand siphons and
do no. The vacant ones with the tunnels underneath. You know, where we're going to be running the Jade Helm invasion of Texas. Yeah, we'll have your female relief right over there.
Did you see how old Mr. Norris is backpedaling like a bicyclist trying to go backwards?
No, really?
Chuck Norris, he must follow his Twitter feeds and stuff, because the last couple of days he's been, I didn't mean to say that this is black and different, and you go and they were actually trying to invade. No, what I was saying is we should be concerned about these types of exercises and stuff, and I'm going, dude, you're gonna have to break out the fire hose here in a minute, because you're starting to smoke. It was just so funny. These guys get out there, somebody sticks a mic in their face, and they just say whatever dribbling crick comes out of their mouth, and then have to go back a day or two later and go, oops, what did I say? Oh, no. They're not going to buy my newest book about how I'm a black belt politician, you know, kind of crap.
Exactly.
Anywho, I thought I would just touch your base, and I shall now go away and let somebody else have a piece of you.
All right, John, you have yourself a good evening.
Fairly well. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. Out on the road, that's John. And let's keep it going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good, Jim. How about you?
Oh, just listening. And first, I want to wish y'all a safe trip up there and everything.
Thank you very kindly.
And hopefully your all your mechanisms work so people can share, and a good send-off for Mr. Stress.
Yeah, apparently it's going to be raining here when we leave, but the forecast...
Now, it's like Ratchaper over here.
Yeah, the forecast for Cleveland on Tuesday is partly sunny, so...
Well, let's hope the weather holds, and that'll be a good thing. You know, I was just thinking about Texas, and that night... Not that night, but that excerpt that was so well done about Miss Fellows and Night of the Iguana.
Yeah.
And what Maxine, played by Ava Gardner, said something about they need dikes on the plains of Texas. You remember that?
Yes, indeed. I'd forgotten, but I do.
Yeah, I can just imagine exactly how they would feel or what their attitudes are now towards getting federal relief when they were so cavalier about relief for other parts of the country, and now they've got a problem.
Oh, they weren't cavalier. They were downright hostile.
Well, I was just trying to be decent, but you're right. They were hostile, and you know, it's just amazing how these people will denounce any type of federal aid and stuff like that until they need it. And God, will they holler like a stuck pig for it?
Yeah, because they deserve it. And see,
you know,
as a big government liberal progressive, Jim, I think they do deserve it. I don't want to withhold a damn penny from them.
Well, I think, you know, maybe they ought to get some of those big old places that were headquartered by Count Dicula, Blackwater. Weren't their headquarters in Texas? Or subsidiary company?
Oh, Halliburton, sure. Yeah.
Halliburton. Well, I mean, you know, I think Halliburton needs to pony up some money and help these people out if they're so adverse to federal.
No, they're waiting for the government contract on the rebuild. They'll get theirs, Jim. But you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see a sign in front of every place that's being rebuilt in flood-ravaged Texas that says, this reconstruction effort brought to you by really big government, that really big government all you people despise, and Barack Obama, whom you despise, and liberals, whom you despise, and progressives, whom you despise. Wake up.
Well, I think that'd be a good thing, but you never would see it go up. But, I mean, I really hate to see what's happened to those people. I don't wish bad for anybody. But
no, it's horrifying. My heart breaks.
But, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, you speak about irony. If that's not ironic, I don't know what the hell is.
Well, the state of Texas is now in the firm grip, and she shows no sign of letting go anytime soon, of the goddess of irony.
Well, yeah.
And when she gets hold of you, you're a rag doll, and she's going to play with you till she gets tired of you.
Next up, Frogs and Locusts and Rivers of Blood. With the Rivers of Blood, with the Rivers of Blood being played by Rivers of Blood's understudy, Rivers of Fracking Waste.
Well, that's a point too. And pursuant to Senator Graham's announcement, and I guess they had their big, whatever it was. Where did he announce from? What city? Do you know?
No, just that he was in the hill country of South Carolina. It looked like he might have been at Clemson.
Clemson University?
Could be, because that was the first place he mentioned when he said, I want to be surrounded by my dear friends from Clemson and Walhalla.
You know, that would be interesting if, in fact, he were, and I'm just projecting here, what do you think would happen if he did get on one of the two tickets? Can you imagine the stuff that will be, I've seen vitriol, I've seen nasty business and stuff like that. Can you imagine what that campaign would be like?
Well, I can see a situation in which he would be seen, in which he would be seen as actually good vice presidential material, because among other things, there's no worry that some Democrat is going to take his seat if it opens up, so that's a safe seat. So that fulfills one area of inquiry. Secondly, he has been in the Senate, and he has accorded himself many accolades for his foreign policy expertise, so there'd be that. But then, who would pick him? Scott Walker?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's particularly...
Jeb? Now, Jebby, I think Jebby might pick him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Jebby was on Face the Nation yesterday, and it was the last day of the host.
Bob Schieffer, yeah, and
Bob Schieffer,
closed out a long and somewhat distinguished career by having Jebby Bush on there to announce that the Social Security retirement age needs to be raised to 70.
Yeah, I heard that too. I mean, he definitely had some things to say, and I think Bob Schieffer is, I think he's glad to be out of that position. I really do. I don't know who's gonna take his place. They probably haven't been selected. Today was, Friday was Imus' last day. So I guess Lindsey Graham doesn't have to worry about Imus being on TV saying things.
Funding American greatness.
Yeah, I swear. You still think I made that up, but I did not.
Okay, well, I'll just take your word for it.
But it's going to be quite a race, that's for sure. And I'll tell you, Bob, the Clintons with this slush fund or whatever you want to call it that they have, they're going to really play hell with that too.
But the thing is, they're going to play, and this is something that I was talking about as far back as whenever the Republicans were talking, because you have to remember that Rush Limbaugh has been masturbating over the prospects of a Hillary Clinton presidential campaign since, 2000. He issued a lead pipe cinch guarantee, take it to Vegas and bet the farm prediction on her running in 2000. He did the same in 2004. He did it in 2008. She did run. She got beat. But the thing that I observed all along is that, they've got a machine that has long been built, Jim, for attacking her. And frankly, the Clinton Foundation is a philanthropy. It's a real, live, honest-to-God, 501c3 philanthropy. And for the most part, everything I've read about it says there's no there. Bill Clinton traded on his celebrity status to go and get people and governments and rich people to give money for his pet projects, things like AIDS research and abatement in Africa. And they've done magnificent work.
Saying. I know what you're saying, but don't you think they are going to, they already are trying to pick that apart and find something?
Oh, sure. I mean, the minute that the Washington Post got in bed with a known, admitted right-wing fabricator of bullshit, you knew that the fix was in. I mean, the guy had nothing but allegations, but he had written a book full of his allegations, and the Washington Post said, "Oh, pretty please, can we get in bed with you and say tawdry things about Secretary Senator Clinton?" And he said, "Why, shucks, sure," and laughed all the way to the bank.
Oh, yeah. Well, Mrs. Secretary Clinton, I would guess, is going to be the Democrat front runner. Second spot, I'm not sure. Could it be Bernie Sanders, or could it be somebody else?
You know what? I think, and I wouldn't be surprised if her handlers aren't telling her, he's building momentum, because he is. You know, he's out-fundraised every single Republican candidate for president. People are genuinely excited about Bernie Sanders because he gives off an air of genuineness.
But, you know, now they're trying to pick out some type of article he had written back in the 50s.
70s.
Or was it the... Okay. Whenever. I can't keep them all straight because they're all saying this, that, and the other. It's hard to keep straight. But now they're trying to, to pin him to the wall on that one. And I'm not sure what the subject of the article was about.
Oh, it's a smear, and who knows where it came from. It could have come from the Republicans. It could have come from the Clinton camp. I mean, this is big boy politics, and it's a blood sport. But, you know, he wrote something back in the 70s. It was speculative. It was fictional. And I guess it's got some sexual violence in it. So now he's a fire-breathing misogynist rape enabler.
Oh, yeah. They are definitely going to pull out everything they possibly can on that. And, you know, another thing, against this background of Hastert, that's going to be something, too. I just wonder how that's going to turn out.
I think the trial, if it goes to trial, is going to be very interesting because, honestly, I don't think a bunch of Americans are going... I don't think the American people, and who knows about the jury, but this is not the Denny Hastert defense hour, but the idea that withdrawing money from your bank account to pay off a blackmailer is a criminal act? What was he supposed to do? I would not want to be making the prosecution's case to that jury. Unless the prosecutor thinks that he can inflame the passions of the jury by explaining what it was he was paying to keep secret.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's what they're going to go for. I mean, he could have picked other financial mechanisms by which he paid this person or these two people. I mean, it's like the thing with Bill Cosby. You know how it started out 1, 2, 3, 4?
And then it turned into a tidal wave?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, this whole thing in 2016, they ought not to have debate. Hell, they ought to have a damn fight cage. And that's basically what it's going to turn out to be. It's just going to be one of the nastiest elections we've ever seen in our lives. But we'll see, and that's about all I have to say, but I would think that it would be interesting to see if Lindsey Graham would be able to pull that out.
You probably could have put that any number of different ways, and it wouldn't have been funny, but that one was.
Well, I mean, pull that out of the hat. Thank you.
Yes.
Please.
I never know when you're channeling your inner incorrigible, Jim.
Oh, I'm not nearly as incorrigible as you.
You are the king of the bone dry straight line.
Well, you never can tell. Maybe it's just a Freudian slip. Who knows? And
Well, in Lindsay's case, it's probably a Freudian hoop skirt, but, yeah, what are we talking about? Jim, have yourself a good evening.
The same to you.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim. There's that old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. And we do. And, of course, these Supreme Court opinions came out. None of them are the ones that we're waiting for. You know, headgear, socks as paraphernalia, threatening messages posted to, you know, free speech. Yep. You've absolutely got free speech to say any kind of nasty, filthy thing on the Internet that you want to, as long as it doesn't appear particularly likely that you can carry it out, because, you know, bullying isn't real. And I'm not surprised by that ruling, because it's in line with the Sweet Granny McDead Fetus poster ruling, where by 9-0 they ruled that a woman has the right to assault women trying to go to attend to their health care needs, but that people trying to attend to their health care needs don't have a right not to be assaulted. Damn, that is some brilliant, and I do mean brilliant, reasoning. Oh, my goodness. Hey, it's Carol Baker.
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
Guten Abend.
Yes, I'm sorry, no sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Well, I went as far as I could, so we'll just have to work in hillbilly for the rest of the way.
Indeed. I want to talk to you about Bernie.
Okay.
And I want to talk about this crap that came out about him. I think my frustration is that something that he wrote 40 some years ago in an alternative newspaper that no longer exists.
Right, so that means somebody had to work pretty damned hard to find it.
Yeah, exactly. And he said he imagined male and female sexual fantasies to illustrate how both sexes have internalized gender stereotypes, which he went on to write were self-defeating. And why he was writing about that, I have no idea. But I got to tell you, Bob, if I had to have my feet held to the fire for things that I wrote 40 years ago, I'd be pretty screwed. If I had to have my feet held to the fire for things I wrote 15 years ago, I'd be screwed.
Well, yeah, but even beyond that, I'm fascinated by the question, Carol, of how it got there, and I see it as a very interesting whodunit.
It's opposition research, and my bet is that it probably came from the Hillary camp.
That was my first guess.
If I was betting on anything, it would be from the Hillary camp, because she's really concerned about him. And I got to tell you, Hillary Clinton is not my choice in any way, shape, or form.
Nor mine.
But I am heartily opposed to us eating our own.
Me too. And,
that, and I will throat punch the next son of a bitch who uses the word Hillary and pantsuit in the same sentence.
I'm pretty tired of the pantsuit business. Because,
me too.
Because that was an invention of right wing talk radio, probably can be found can be back sourced all the way to the oxymoron Flesh Flimball.
Probably.
I mean, I was hearing Hillary jokes, and, you know, they're really nasty jokes, all the way back to Bill Clinton's first term. I can't chalk it up to anything except pure base misogyny, but Republicans really do despise female members of the species.
They really do. They're so threatened by them. I mean, it just makes their dicks shrivel and just withdraw inside.
Shrinkage!
Yeah.
Serious. I mean, or isn't she just like a cold lake?
Yeah, well, shrieking and shrewishness and
yeah. And,
I mean, okay, let's put it this way. When's the last time someone criticized Rand Paul's pants?
Or his hair.
Well, I do that.
No. I'm talking about in the mainstream media, which I call the right. When have any of them said one word about his hair?
Because it's a known fact on among progressives and, you know, us hardcores and whatnot. But when's the last time a member of the for-profit media referred to the fact that Ted Cruz looks exactly like Joseph McCarthy?
McCarthy? Yeah. I've long called him the illegitimate son of Joseph McCarthy because it's scary. It's either him or Mr. Haney from Green Acres.
Oh, I actually hold fairly high regard for Mr. Haney, but
no, he really. If you put a dopey hat on him,
Pat Buttram,
he does.
Of Haleyville, Alabama, yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's only a couple of hundred miles from Burnt Corn.
But they're so terrified of Bernie right now that they're having to dig pretty deep. And I've seen some progressives come on and go, the next person who comes on social media and says one word to defend Bernie Sanders, fuck you. And it's
what?
It's like,
over this?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so I confess I have not read the deeply disturbing alternative media article. Have you found it yet, or have you seen anything other than allusions to it, Carol?
Yes. If you go to the New York Times, Mother Jones printed it in full. Mother Jones, Salon.com is attacking him. I mean, things that I consider progressive, more progressive-leaning outlets are attacking him.
Jesus. I've been kind of busy the last couple of days, so I must have missed it, but that's deeply disturbing.
No, I went to the New York Times.
But then again, we eat our own. We do that professionally on this side, Carol.
Yeah, and why do we do that?
Because it's not perfect. We need the perfect candidate. We need Ralph.
I'm sorry, I don't need a pony. And I've gone through this. I've got some like amazing progressive friends who sit and talk about how Barack Obama is a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. And I'm going, no, he isn't. You have to look at what he has been up against. Do I think that he was idealistic when he went in? Absolutely. Do I think he was naive? Most certainly. Do I think he got a big, fat dose of reality?
He got his first big fat dose of reality the minute he signed the closed Gitmo order.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's his fault it's still open because the Congress has, you know, I mean, the Congress is just sitting there. I mean, they the Congress does whatever Obama tells them to do.
Apparently.
I mean, and look, I get frustrated with him. There are places where he could have been a great progressive president, or at least tried harder to be one, Carol. But he is what he is. And
as soon as I say, you're right, America would have been so much better off with John McCain and Mitt Romney.
Well, it's exactly, and that's the thing. That's the thing that I used to say a lot. Every time I get frustrated with Barack Obama, I have Walter. You know, obviously Walter Cronkite lives in his voice lives in my head. And I hear the following, and other people have heard this. I don't know if you have. I hear, we take you now to a live broadcast from Air Force One, where Sarah Palin is taking the oath of office as president following the death from skin cancer of President John McCain. And instantaneously, I am really okay with Barack Obama.
Yeah, I said yesterday I've got 506 more days where I don't wake up in night terrors with that with that thought in my head.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. I support Bernie Sanders. I want Bernie Sanders, and I know that they're going to do everything they can do to attack him. But this article was written in 1972. It's 43 years old. And, you know, Bob, 20 years ago, I was a good little girl who went to church every Sunday and taught Sunday school and you know, went to a church where they spoke in tongues. I'm cured.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, I think there were a combination of events that made him not the and I think, Carol, that a lot of us projected onto him what we wanted him to be. It
sure.
It's that whole St. Paul, I was all things to all men kind of thing.
Absolutely.
But you know, I'm not gonna sit here and say that you know, if the first term of President Bishop Willard Romney was just now wrapping up, that we would all be in a land of beer and Skittles and Frisbees and wheat checks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would probably already be involved in World War III.
Oh, I'm sure.
And that is still a distinct possibility, especially when you listen to the remarks of Lindsay. Lindsay wants him some war because it's so manly.
Well, yeah, he'll definitely get his war on to, you know, and stuff another sock down his pants to show how manly he is.
Yeah. So.
And I weep for this country.
Well, I regardless of the outcome of 2016, Carol, I weep for this country. I weep for the permanent political season that now engulfs us, and about which no one seems even remotely interested in crafting a remedy. Somehow or another, the UK, Australia, Japan, France, the developed world generally, manages to have election campaigns that happen, and then they're done. Not us, because, and the answer is perpetual campaign seasons are good for the for-profit media complex. And so naturally, it's a reality show that never ends.
And I'm so sick of it. It's like, and then once the election's over, you've still got this kind of like bleeding overload of like a week, where you still have to watch these campaign ads, and you can't change the channel fast enough. And once you do, you just hit another one. And this never-ending cycle of more money and longer. When I found out that the Brits have, like, what do they have, like a 45-day?
Yeah, what, 6 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, why can't we do that?
Because it would not be good for the for-profit media complex.
It would not be good for Republicans, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, who do you think owns the for-profit media?
Well,
I mean, those aren't potential Sanders voters sitting on the board of NBC Universal and CBS Viacom and ABC Disney.
That's right.
So we're going to, and again, we need to understand it as wealth transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Even the way the media handles elections is wealth transfer.
Sure.
And it's socialism of its sort, but the wrong kind, in which we take from the have-nots and give to the haves.
Well, that's exactly the problem that I have with people bitching about socialism, because they're like, they're just robbing from the rich to give to the poor. And I'm going, no, actually, they're not. They're robbing from the poor and giving to the rich, and statistics prove that that's true. And so if you don't like socialism, stop doing it. Because all socialism really is it just means you actually get something in return for your tax dollars.
Yeah, as opposed to doing nothing but, you know, building airplanes that no one wants.
Exactly.
And ships that no one needs.
And right now, what's happening is the bulk of our tax dollars go to feed this massive military-industrial complex. And any...
Are you there? Carol? Apparently we're having connection problems. It'll be back in a moment. Lost her. Come on. Come on back and talk to Teddy Bear. Who remembers that one? Yeah. I wish you'd tell Cletus to stop peeing on the phone line.
It's a party line, honey. I do the best I can.
I understand.
Marlene was late for, you know, the church ladies group, so.
And she had to let him know. I understand.
She needed a ride.
Okay, so you've got a little pushback here. I just got an email from Andy.
Okay.
Andy says, Mr. Obama is a 1970s Republican. He's even said so. This is from his lips. He admits it. Carol has it wrong. He's a neoliberal Republican, a Wall Street Republican. And by the way, so is Ms. former Secretary of State Clinton. She's a neoliberal Republican, too. The Democratic Party has left the working class, so we don't have a party. And I'll start by saying that I think that question is largely going to be answered one way or the other by Bernie's candidacy.
Absolutely.
Now, if Bernie can turn the Democratic Party upside down, and it will be a pop, if there's a victory there, it will be a populist victory. It
Absolutely.
Will not be a DNC victory. Uh-huh. That was my other question. You know, if the OPPO research didn't come from Team Clinton, then odds are it came from Debbie Wasserman Schultz and, you know, Team DNC.
Yeah. I'm still betting on Hillary's people.
Yeah, me too.
But I will tell you that I think, Andy, in all fairness, I think that's a very simplistic view. I think he's a lot further to the right than any of us suspected. But I do not believe that he is a Republican. He's a Republican by comparison of what Republicans were back in the 70s.
Yeah, I think
we've been dragged so far to the right because we're compromisers.
Yeah, well, and the other part of that is the ascendancy of right-wing radio. But I think that I can't remember the quote exactly. I think the quote from President Obama was, and Andy will tell me if I'm getting it wrong, that, you know, that he would have been a moderate Rockefeller-type Republican in the 1970s.
Yeah, he probably would have.
And, of course, a moderate right-wing Republican like a Rockefeller would be considered to be a blazing, barricade-storming hero of the proletariat commie by the RNC today, and the tea baggers, and the birchers, baggers, booger eaters, yeah, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think that's a fact.
Yeah.
I would like for, you know, it was depressing early in his presidency when he said that his summer reading was going to consist of a biography of Ronald Reagan, when we were all kind of hoping he'd spend his week at the beach reading about FDR.
Exactly. Look, I didn't get the pony, okay? I didn't get my pony, and I didn't get my solid gold Obama phone, and I didn't get my Obama gas card, and I didn't get my free car, and I didn't get to make more money, you know, on social welfare programs than people who actually, you know, work for a living. I didn't get all that stuff that everybody on the right says that all the liberals are getting. I didn't get the president I wanted.
Yeah, any more than I'm getting my monthly George Soros money check.
Exactly. But it's such a complicated. I will tell you, and I'll tell you one thing. I think if Bernie Sanders gets elected by some miracle, I think everybody who thinks that he's the farthest right-wing socialist they've ever seen in their life are going to find out just how hard it is to lead in this country.
Well, there's that, and there's also the fact that by comparison to almost any other political system in the world that's functioning, especially the social democracies of Europe and Asia,
mm-hmm.
Bernie could not qualify as a socialist.
No.
He's only a socialist in the realm of a world in which socialism is what? Slightly to the left of Mussolini?
Mm-hmm. That's because they're thinking socialism like Mussolini instead of socialism like the mix of capitalism and socialism that we enjoyed in the 60s and 70s, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, post-World War II, that built a very strong middle class in this country. Because that's really what it was. It was a mix of socialism and capitalism. And what we've done now is the Kochs, Chucky and Davy Koch, have decided that that's a bad thing, and they want a pure capitalist society where, you know, there's a toll road at the end of every street. Everything's been privatized.
Yeah. And, by the way, a note coming in from Greg in your home state of Iowa Waystand. Greg says, I went to the Ames, Iowa Bernie rally. It was a small venue. I estimate that inside and outside there were 300 to 350 people on a cool day. It's early, and they need to make it easier to find the events on their website. I've sent Bernie $50.
Good for you.
And that's what's happening. It's $50. It's $10. It's $5.
And he's outraising everybody.
He's outraising all the Republicans. The only person he's not outraising is Hillary.
That's right.
And that's because all Hillary has to do is, and you know what? He is a perfect bete noire for Hillary, because all she has to do is pick up the phone and call Jamie Dimon and say, you see how excited people are about Bernie?
That's
gonna
right.
Need more money, Jamie. And boom, there's another check from Goldman Sachs, and boom, there's another check from J.P. Morgan, and boom, there's another check from a hedge fund.
Absolutely. I've long said she was far too institutionalized to Washington to ever be even remotely labeled a liberal.
Oh, no, please. If Mussolini arose from the grave and ran as a Democrat, he would be labeled by the Republican, the biggest liberal since Ted Kennedy.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's just a fact. But all we can do is try. Now, the question comes down to, and this is where it's going to get real interesting, what happens if she gets the nomination and then, because I've already seen it out there among the Naderites and the Steiners, they're going to be hollering that, you know, we've got to have a revolution in America. Vote green. And a lot of people will.
I know.
And then there will be the conversation about, well, you can vote your conscience if you're in a safe state. But for God's sakes, if you're in a place like Florida or Ohio, you know, please vote for the Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think that even Rand Paul and that thing on his head, you know, libertarian opportunist, I don't think Rand Paul would be such a shitburger as to run a third-party campaign against the Republican nominee.
He wouldn't.
No, because I'm still young. I can, me and this thing on my head, we can still be president. You know, if he can just keep his kid from getting popped for DUI.
Scott Walker's the one who's scaring me.
Well, as long as he's got the Chuck and Dave money, I'm not going to write him off.
I'm not going to write him off either. And did you see what he just did with education in Wisconsin?
Oh yeah, you mean the thing where the boys under the bridge can be elementary school teachers now?
Yeah, yeah. Because we aren't dumbing down our kids fast enough.
Well, the Wisconsin idea has got to finally die. You know, it can't be coughing up blood on the back stoop. It's got to be dead, because that is the single most viable and clearly articulated idea of progressivism in this country, the Wisconsin idea. And it has got to be killed, because Chuck and Dave see that as a threat to them personally.
Yep.
Now, if Kansas was to have a frat quake and a hole in the earth was to open up and swallow Chuck and Dave, yeah, I'd call it justice, and I'd run out and sacrifice another rubber chicken and a whoopee cushion to the goddess of irony.
But I don't see
that as likely to happen.
I'd throw a virgin in that pit, but I don't know how many Girl Scout camps I can raid.
Yeah, no kidding. Jesus. But I don't. All I can say is it's going to be interesting. But the fact that the New York Times referred to Rand's little hissy on the Senate floor as a soliloquy,
ugh.
I don't think he's going to be getting really kind treatment from the old gray lady.
Yeah, and the number of liberals that I see talking about how reasonable he seems all of a sudden, because they don't like the Patriot Act. Look, I don't like the Patriot Act either, but I also know that it's a ruse, and too many of his ideas are bad, and he's a dangerous man and a bigot, and he will kill every social program that there is.
Right, because those things are freedom killers.
And I've had just about enough of people hating on the poors.
Yeah, if only the poors would get up on their own hind legs and go out and take umbrage at it.
It's true, because I have to tell you, I laid in a gutter for 5 years, you know, with my solid gold Obama phone, and all of a sudden a man in a custom Italian suit walked up to me, looked down and screamed, "Get a job!" And my life changed.
And you got a job.
Yeah, I was like, all I needed to do was be told to get a job, and it was just that easy.
It is.
Cards. I'm sorry, but.
Well, no, they're at war with us.
This poverty envy that they have just is beyond me.
The food rules. Rice but no beans but no rice, no hamburger for you hammock layer.
No tuna in a can, because an 85-cent can of tuna is like lobster. Sorry, I did the rice thing for 6 months. It's not healthy.
Look, it's not a joke when I talk about when I talk about eating the fancy ramen.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of gave up on the fancy ramen because the fancy ramen was ruining me. But it's ruining a lot of other people, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got, if you've got a little rural grocery store like I do up here at the Wigwam Pig, there is a substantial portion of an entire aisle that is nothing but varieties of ramen.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, you can buy more kinds of beans in Hooterville than I even knew existed.
And beans are good food. Look for those to be removed from the list as soon as possible.
Exactly. But they're cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They absolutely are.
But, you know, the poors are too well fed. And they have refrigerators. Because God forbid they should actually be able to preserve the food, what little bit they're able to buy. They shouldn't have television sets. This idea that they're supposed to be sitting in four dingy walls, huddled around, you know, a candle, eating cold beans from a can with a plastic spoon, and that's the best they deserve from us, and they should be grateful.
Well, you know what? You can hurt yourself with a spork.
Oh, no. They don't get sporks. That's like a weapon. They get them cheap plastic spoons, them real flimsy ones that break after a while.
Right. It's, well, and that's, you know, I come back to the same thesis again and again and again, Carol. We are witnessing the behavior of a crumbling empire.
Yes, we are.
and it is not pretty, and it's not pleasant, and it's not fun to live in.
Well, today, Bernie did an interview with Katie Couric on Yahoo, and he urged a million young people to march on Washington, which I kind of had to laugh at because I can't imagine that they would have enough energy to peel themselves away from their cell phones to do anything like that, but I'd march with them.
Yeah.
I'm not young, but I'd march with them. Because it's going to be too late, and that's when there's going to be a revolt in this country, and it's not going to be pretty. Because the police forces are already private. They're not here to serve and protect. They're private security forces for the 1%.
And, by the way, I wanted to recommend something to you and everybody else. I posted it over on my Facebook page,
yes,
and it got a few likes. It's kind of a long read.
Okay.
But it is about the philosophical response to climate change.
I saw that. It was a real buzzkill. I read the whole thing.
Well, it is, but my God, there's a lot of real thought provocation going on in there.
Hey, just because it's a buzzkill doesn't mean that it shouldn't be read.
Right, and the takeaway for me was about halfway through when they made it real plain that if we don't stop burning coal, we're done.
That's right.
You know, no more of this clean coal, no more of this carbon sequestration, no more of it. It has got to be stopped.
Moreover, we've already gone so far that our lives have already changed in ways that we can't take it back. It's already gone too far, and we're going to have to get used to more extreme weather. I mean, if we stopped everything today, the damage has been done, and that's why it's so critical that in order for total, you know, environmental collapse, the urgency is there. No, it was a good article. I did read it. I read everything you put up.
Oh, I know you do. I know you do. And what the other interesting part out is the question that ethicists, because the whole article is about the ethical and philosophical response to a climate change world. And, you know, it makes plain that, you know, we're not going to be able to stop it now. It is happening. It's going to continue to happen. And all we can do is try to mitigate it.
Exactly.
And we're not particularly interested in the mitigation thing.
Exactly.
But there's that one observation in there. What duty does a person presently living on Earth owe to the future? And I kind of smiled when I read that because I thought, well, you know what we need to do is we need to get a message to the authors and tell them to go and talk to the indigenous peoples of the world, especially the people who adhere to the seven generations idea. And they'll tell you the duty that you owe to the future. You owe everything.
Everything.
To the future. Because isn't theirs. This isn't yours, you know?
That's true. Not to change the subject, but I got to go, but I wanted to add one more thing in here. Many moons ago, I had my own radio show, and I co-hosted it with a lovely woman from South Carolina, Stan. And she's been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and she's on her second round of chemo, and the doctors have determined that the only thing that is going to save her is a bone marrow transplant. And none of her family members are matches. So if you are under the age of 55 and you have a body mass index of 40% or below, you are a good candidate, and I do urge everyone to get on the bone marrow registry if you have that chance, because she needs help. And she's
like, I read your post, Carol. How does one do that?
There's a website. All you have to do is Google bone marrow registry, and they'll take you through the steps.
Okay.
And it's actually quite simple.
Well, I'm going to go do it.
Vicky's a wonderful lady, and I'm too old and too fat, so I can't do it. So, but I do urge people to do that because, you know, you never know whose life you're going to save someday, and she's a wonderful gal, and she's my soul sister, and I miss her. terribly.
You never know when it's going to roll back around and be you.
Exactly. It could be me one day.
Yep.
So anyway,
everybody go. If you're within that parameter, less than 55, less than 40% bone body mass index, look up bone marrow registry and go see what you can do.
Won't cost you a thing.
Nope. Thank you, Carol. You're a giver.
I'm a giver.
Yes, you are. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, brother.
Bye. The one and only Carol Baker calling from Hooterville. Let's keep the conversation going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yeah, hey.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me cut the radio.
Yeah, is this Todd?
How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Oh, it was wonderful here in Carroll. I'm great. It's we had a nice little shower here in South Carolina, and since I'm poor, I have to grow food, and tomatoes are looking good, and I have some amaranth seeds that my friend gave me, so I'm gonna grow those. I'm just telling you, I'm stoked, right? This thing with Bernie, the corporate America does not get it. They don't effing get it. You know what I'm saying? They don't get it.
Yeah.
And because I'm was totally not with Hillary from the jump. It'd be great to have a woman as a president, but maybe not her. But Carol touched on a lot of interesting things.
She always does.
Oh, of course. The trouble. See, we need this is it's really interesting because for me, like, I've been political ever since I was old enough, even before that. But I already decided this will be the year that I might not vote, which I've voted every election since I was old enough. I've never missed one. And there's a lot of other people like me, kind of old but not that old, about your age, whatever. But see, people are getting tired. This is, I believe, people are, you hate that word, but whatever.
Well, but you know why.
Yeah, right. I don't mean it in that context. Yeah. But people feel like, folks who pay attention, we're tired of being cornered into false choices. You know what I mean? A false choice where you have to hold your nose. It's like, well, I'm voting against the lesser. I'm voting for the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, you'd like to vote for somebody you actually believe in for a change. And look,
exactly.
I'll be straightforward. And I'll probably piss off the pro-Hillary people. I don't mean to. We have a right in this country to make certain decisions politically, and I try to do it based on intellect and based upon knowledge of history and current events. I'm never going to get excited about Hillary Clinton. That is not to say that I may not vote for her if she is the nominee in November 2016. In fact, I'll go so far as to say I probably will. Because in a state like Almost Level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, it'll be a protest vote. Because this state will be carried by whatever dead from the neck up, tongue-speaking, floor-rolling, strychnine-swigging serpent handler manages to get the Republican nomination. And they're all that, whether it's Huckabee or Cruz or Scott Walker, they all are going to play to the lowest common denominator of the ignorant right-wing base.
I thought you were being sarcastic, like, when I would hear you say stuff like that in terms of your descriptions, your adjectives of those type of people up until maybe last year. And then I started doing research, and I was like, oh, my God, these people do handle snakes. They do drink poison, and they say, well, if God loves me, he'll save me. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're out of your mind. You're fucking insane.
Now, those people are actually a relative minority. But you know, the only difference between them and a Southern Baptist relative minority. That's kind of a joke there. They're all relatives. But the only differentiation between them and a Southern Baptist is the slightly better clothing, and you know they do their drinking after church, not during it.
Oh yeah, this every time I see like what they call the First Baptist Church, I now understand its code. Now it means to me that all right, these are the folks in town, the lawyers, the judges. You know, they got their little caste system set up. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I had to learn a lot as being an adult. I mean, I used to visit down here when I was little, but now I live here. I'm understanding how this stuff works. It's, you know, last time I talked to you, yeah, they're weirdos, man. They're an effing cult, man. No wonder kids aren't.
And you know what? There are enough of them to change the political landscape of this country. And most of them, Todd, are not sharp enough to actually understand what it is they say they want. I want us to return America to our Judeo-Christian roots. And yet if that happens, the deacon, who likes to send somebody in his stead to pick up the bottle of old panther piss every week, you know, the 100-proof stuff, he's not going to be able to do that. Because there will be some Old Testament biblical law that will get his ass stoned to death. Okay? And you know what? Just to say it, if they can outlaw abortion all over the new United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now forever today, well, it's going to get real interesting when Precious Pumpkin gets pregnant by a black fella.
Bob, stop it.
Well, am I lying? Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. No. It like you said, it would be very interesting. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well. Oh, man. Well. You know. And you know something? I used to like to go to happy hour down here, but I had to stop that because these people, man, after a few beers, you'd be surprised.
South will rise again!
Yep. Yeah, oh my God. And
get Grandpappy's old cavalry saber out. We're gonna oust that treasonous one out of our White House. Come on, y'all.
Oh God. Well, let me ask you something. All right, this is something I just learned. I was like, what the fuck? They celebrate something called Confederate Memorial Day or something like that. The banks are closed. I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you celebrating
treason?
Like, did you not get the fucking memo? Slavery was wrong, bitch. What the fuck is wrong with you?
We're not. This has nothing. No. Oh, you apparently haven't taken the master class yet, Todd. Slavery has nothing to do with this. We are celebrating our honorable Confederate heritage of people who wasn't afraid to defend their homes when the bluebellies come a shooting and a killing.
Well.
Yeah, because you know, because that's what they were doing at Fort Sumter. You know, they were just lobbing shells into Charleston. Only they weren't. But
well,
you know, there was Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard with the cadets from the Citadel, and you know, far.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do remember. I had one of my advanced history classes in college when I started college here in the state, and it didn't work out, needless to say. But the chairman of the department, man, he was from Yale or Harvard, and he was the chair. And I mean it, if you did not admit, in other words, you could not pass, you could not get an A on an exam, because he was really big into essays, which is great. Because, you know, that's wonderful. However, he kept saying the Civil War was not about slavery.
It was a war about economics and oppression of our Southern way of life.
That was his meme. I kept looking at him like, man, what? And so, I listened.
Did they ever get around to referring to it as the War of Northern Aggression?
No, he never went that far because he knew that wouldn't. No, he couldn't. No, that's bullshit. But he couldn't do that. But I remember, man. I remember. I mean, I filled up the blue book. I was just so irritated.
Oh, you know, young and idealistic, and you failed to take into account, shut up, and pass the class.
Right. Oh, I was one of those. Listen, Bob, I have enough credit hours. I could have a PhD. I think I have 198 credit hours. I mean, I looked at my transcripts the other day. Yeah, I do have them. I didn't know what I wanted to do at first. I kept switching around. You know, I switched around. I was like, oh, that looks interesting. Let me take that. You know. I was one of those. Right. My friends were like, no, just shut up, man. I was like, no, this motherfucker's crazy. Hell no, I'm not going to shut up. And people would stop me after class and they would talk to me and they were like, hey, what? Because apparently in the South, when they go to school, public school, they don't ask questions. They just sit there and absorb whatever the fuck, whatever the person is saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whoever's teaching. That's not how I would grow up. No.
Well, if the whole rest of the class is sitting nodding their little old heads, you better nod your head too. My reality is, my parents were West Virginians. They moved to Alabama, and I got my Yankee ass beat, in a first grade kind of way. I got my Yankee ass beat several, on no small number of occasions, for being a Yankee.
Oh shit. Yeah. Oh, they're still fighting the war thing. That's the other thing.
Yeah, but what most people don't realize, Todd, is they won it.
What?
Yeah, they won it. There were terrible losses during the war part of it, but Reconstruction was defeated, and that meant that any of the positive changes that the entire bloodletting could have brought on were defeated. You know, Reconstruction is a dirty word when you're a kid learning history in the South. But the fact of the and the fact of the matter is, a Southern terrorist campaign led by former treason committers like Nathan Bedford Forrest defeated Reconstruction, because the idea was to extend the franchise to black men. I mean, never women. I mean, come on, that'd be crazy. And, property ownership and an equalization of civil society. You had men of color in state legislatures and even in the Congress.
Yeah, that didn't last. You see how long
right.
that lasted.
Right, and the terrorism, and the Southern terrorism campaign put Reconstruction to an end. And then you get Jim Crow and you get Plessy and boom.
Well, like that woman's new book, that woman, I forget her name now, but the new Jim Crow, I cannot recall her name at this point, but it's a very interesting read, the snippets I've read. But going back to Nathan Bedford, now see, why is it that people have a lot of people have trouble making that connection between Nathan Bedford Forrest and those being like the original American terrorists, besides the Tea Party people blaming the key thing on the Indians. Let's put that aside.
Yeah.
That's terrorism. If that's not terrorism, what is?
Well, sure it was.
You're in your fucking house at night, trying to sleep, the little bit of rest you might get. And you can't even rest, because some jackass might come in and burn your house down because they think you did something or whatever, they're drunk.
Yeah, the Klan was a terrorist organization, and its heyday between the end of the Civil War and, say, 1920 was straight up a terrorist insurgency. And as I pointed out before, D.W. Griffith's The Birth of a Nation was based on a novel, a heroic novel, in which the hero is the title character, the Klansman.
Right. Yep. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. See. Everybody. See. That's like a canister TNT though. That movie. Most people haven't seen that. They don't get it. I was required to watch that. I think I'd watched it before I was required, but. Yeah, and then you look at that era, from the turn of the century into, well, just fast forward. Matter of fact, yeah, fast forward, because that's when the lynching scourge really was with it. Well, it was in full swing. Like let's say late aughts, 19-aughts to like 1930. The lynchings were out of hand, right? It was terrible. But wait a minute, let me tell you what the new lynching is now in the South, right? What they do, they lock black people up on bullshit charges and they make it so you can't get a concealed carry. But all these old white women, all these white dudes, all these white people around here are carrying guns. Guns, they sell guns like hotcakes around here. Period. I had never seen so many guns in my life. Everybody's got a gun. And they just wait for you to look, you know, they say, oh, I felt threatened, bam, you're dead. Because I went for my concealed carry, right? I don't know if I told you that. Yeah. I went for my concealed carry. And the constable, they have these things called constables, and they're the people that ride around and they serve warrants. They're cops, but they're not cops, you know what I mean? That's all they do, is serve warrants. So he was teaching the class, and it's an all-day class, and we're halfway through the class, and he pulls me to the side and says, you know, you should really think about this, because even when you have your permit, it's going to be trouble for you. And I looked at him and said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, it's going to be trouble for you. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, you're black and you're tall and everything, and you've got a bald head, and, you know, it's going to be trouble. And he said,
you're terrifying without the gun.
Well, that's the new lynching. This is the new lynching. This is why these people are so adamant about having firearms available. This is the new lynching. I'm telling you, I'm living this shit. This is the new lynching. I see this.
Yeah, and how many people were in that class? That's a whole bunch of white people going to know that black
guy
got a gun.
Oh, let me tell you. All right, I'll break it down. It was 50 people, and you know what? Surprisingly, there were 5 black women in there. I was the only black male, and all the rest were white males. Or I wouldn't say appear to be white, because you never know who's who and what's what.
Well, especially, South Carolina.
You know, I'm trying to be... Yeah, but anyway, yeah. But I thought about what he said. I was like, damn, man, I'm going to get on a list, and they're going to be on my ass. So I was like, you know what? And I don't ride around with a gun anyway. But, because that's just not, I just want I want the privilege. Matter of fact, if they got guns, I want to be able to defend myself against those crazy people. Because they feel threatened. Just looking at me, I can see so many people. They look at me. They don't know me. They don't know me.
Oh,
I
used to conceal carry once upon a time. I did. And I remember getting into
a... I'm surprised to hear that from you.
Well, it was a backstory. But I got in a brawl. And I remember in the midst of the brawl trying to decide, is it time to shoot this fucker now? And thinking, no, not time to shoot him now. You know, if it gets bad enough, I'll shoot him. But right now, he's just swinging and missing, and I'm punching and hitting. So, no, ain't no need. But I've had that kind of decision making, and on more than one occasion.
Yeah. Well,
and I would not concealed carry ever again. Because among other things, I did not like that decision process. Because there were people around, and there was every bit as good a chance that I was going to hurt one of them as deal with whatever the threat was to me. Now I'll get an email, I can't believe you concealed children. Well, I had a reason.
It's a crazy world, and you know, and what bothers me too. I mean, I can understand it. See, now I understand.
No, if somebody's telling you every day they're gonna kill your ass, you know.
Right, exactly. And if you don't live in the South or you live in a rural area, you know, like I didn't used to understand, man. You know, the police might come, they might not. It might be 40 minutes till they get there. You know?
Yeah, and you'd be surprised the number of rural homes here in West by Cole, Virginia stand, where they've got a picture of a smoking revolver by their door that said, we don't call 911. This house protected by Smith and Wesson.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess guess that's the message, isn't it?
Because, you know, because the reality is, given the response time of law enforcement in some places in West Virginia, the only thing they're going to be good for is to string out the police line tape and draw the chalk outline.
Yeah, and from what you described, there's a pig here also for the food, and yeah, from what you described, so you know you're out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Todd, I got to roll out of here, but it's been a great conversation. I always enjoy it when you call in.
Hey, Bob, take care of yourself, and happy Monday to all the Horn family.
All right. Thanks so much. You take care, Todd.
All right.
Bye now. From behind the cornpone curtain down in South Carolina stand, that's our buddy Todd. It is time to get out of here. I'm sorry if I did not get to your call this evening. Hopefully we'll take care of that maybe, Wednesday?
Yeah.
Remember, on the road to Cleveland tomorrow, and hopefully we will begin when the memorial for Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, begins at 6 o'clock at the Euclid Tavern in Cleveland. We'll be on the road. No fundraising tomorrow, and probably gone Thursday and Friday, so those are fundraising holes, too. We are still $50 away from meeting Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge for the first of the month. Please, somebody meet that so the challenge will be met. Much appreciated. And remember, the ongoing auction of the beautiful piece of West Virginia folk art continues. Just email me and let me know if you're interested. All right, then. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. First and foremost, all of you who spend your precious finite time engaging in this conversation in whatever way that you do. Thank you to those of you who keep us funded. It is vitally important because, well, you know, we don't have any ads. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHEACT.org. And a reminder, check out Coal River Mountain Watch's Facebook page for the link to State Assist. Coal River Mountain Watch is in a bad way in need of your 10 daily votes on that program to advance the work of the Judy Bond Center for Appalachian Future. And that means a $20,000 grant. It costs you nothing to participate. Please tell your friends and neighbors and participate yourself. There's only a couple more days to go, and we need a hard push. And, of course, always. Gina, it's all. The next time we talk, live from Cleveland.